Donald Trump blocked a veterans organization on Twitter, and the executive director is here to talk about what this commander-in-chief actually means for veterans.
Plus, Democrats have their own Roy Moore problems now. We've got Jessica Yaz Barker and Devin Handy in studio to talk about Democrats and their sexual assault problems.
It's Tuesday, November 28th. Oh my goodness, welcome to the Political Beat.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to AfterBuzz TV. It's the Political Beat, the millennial show and podcast breaking down all the news from around the country and around the world. Happy Giving Day. I'm your host, Drexel Hurd, the moderate voice, as they like to tell me, of this show. You can follow me on social media at Drexel Hurd.
And I'm Chelsea Galicia. You can follow me at Chelsea Galicia. I am the lefter of the left voices of the show.
That she is. That's why people apparently like her better. I don't know. Be sure to follow the show at Political
Thanks,
Beat.
Drex. That's very giving of you.
It is. It's because it's Giving Day that I'm giving you that compliment. I hope they like me too. I did see a lot of Giving Day posts today to like different charities because I guess it's the Bill and Melania Gates type thing.
Bill and Melania or Bill and Melinda?
Bill and Melinda Gates.
Sorry. Can you imagine? Can you imagine?
She looked really pretty during those White House Christmas photos, by the way. She looked great.
Melinda, right?
Melania. Oh my gosh, whatever her name is. And so instead of donating to all those charities, I donated to Doug Moore's campaign.
Doug Jones.
What is happening today? Doug Jones's campaign, the Alabama Senate candidate.
I'm not quite sure that is the point of Giving Tuesday.
I was giving to Alabama because they need they need help. And they need a representative that can represent them well. So I donated to that campaign.
Generous of you.
You know, all $20 of it. But it was still something. Anyway, don't forget open enrollment for the Affordable Care Act is still open for another couple of weeks. And signups are open on the ACA.org. ACA.gov, and make sure you get covered if you're not, and get your folks covered as well, because who knows what's going to happen in the next couple of months.
Or days.
Who knows? Right. Also, next week, December 5th, is our year-end review show with the Trump Report. It's going to be a lot of fun. We got a lot of topics to cover because a lot has happened since Donald Trump took
the highlights.
Over.
We'll talk about the highlights.
Yeah.
And the lowlights. Yeah.
Yes. First up onto the show, Executive Director of Vote Vets is here to tell us about the organization and what having Donald Trump as president as a veteran is like. And
can't imagine it's too exciting.
Yeah. And as Chelsea said, we got the Democrats, you know, playing a game of chicken with sexual harassment in the workplace. So we've got a couple of people that are here in the studio to talk about the growing problems the left is facing amid these allegations. But first up, Donald Trump during the campaign said he was the best on veterans. Laugh out loud. But that's not what the veterans organization Vote Vets thinks. Here to talk a little bit more about this is the executive director of Vote Vets and Marine Corps veteran, Will Fisher.
Hi, Will.
Hi, everybody. Thank you so much. Hey, thank you so much for having me in tonight. It's wonderful to be here.
Glad to have you.
Thanks for joining us. So, Will, just tell us a little bit for those that do not know about Vote Vets. I've followed you guys for a long time on Twitter. Tell us a little bit about the organization.
Yeah, great. So first off, my name is Will Fisher. I'm the Director of Government Relations for Vote Vets, and we are the largest progressive veterans organization in the country. We have over 500,000 members, and we're in all 50 states. And what we work to do every single day is to lift the voice of our members around issues related to foreign policy and national security, related to working class and economic issues, and related to, you know, issues like fighting to make sure that our VA healthcare system isn't destroyed and privatized, but also fighting to make sure everybody in this country, veteran or not, has access to quality, affordable healthcare.
So let's go back, you know, a few months and talk about the campaign. What do you think it is about Donald Trump, or what did he promise, that got the vets behind him?
No, I mean, Donald Trump has proven himself on a somewhat regular basis to be categorically the most anti-veteran candidate and anti-veteran president in our nation's history. This is someone who, you know, has headlines following him around like Donald Trump attacks Gold Star families again, or Donald Trump attacks, you know, POWs in the service of Senator John McCain again. Absolutely no concept of what the veteran experience is like, what the military family experience is like. That's because Donald Trump and his family have never served in any capacity in this country in any way. Now, it also goes well beyond just sort of him being a vulgar and empathetically bankrupt person, but it really also gets down to policy issues when it's things like our foreign policy, when you have, you know, Donald Trump basically going onto Twitter and trying to provoke North Korea into a first strike nuclear launch situation, thus provoking them to the point that they attack first, giving him permission slip to attack back and lead us into a catastrophic military situation. Or, you know, Donald Trump's ever expanding quest to deny health care to veterans, whether that's trying to destroy and privatize our VA or whether that's trying to gut Medicaid, a program that 2 million veterans rely on, or during the campaign when Donald Trump says that he doesn't even support a GI bill. You know, whether I should, you know, whether it's on Twitter, whether it's on TV, whether it's through sort of his constant stream of, you know, diarrhea coming out of his mouth or actual Thumbs. Policy issues, Donald Trump is anti-veteran.
I just want to touch on something real quick that you said, because you talked about how the Trump family has never served in the military. Barack Obama didn't serve. Bill Clinton didn't serve. So we've had presidents who've haven't served that have been pretty pro-veteran. How do you think that those prior administrations, whether or not it was the Obama administration, the Bush administration, the Clinton administration, have kind of failed veterans? Because we know that Donald Trump is doing it, but how has other administrations failed veterans? And
Well, I should point out that one does not have to serve in the military to be an effective commander in chief. What separates Donald Trump, though, is he is what is thought of as being a chicken hawk. This is someone who worked tirelessly to avoid service in Vietnam, going so far to use multiple deferments, claiming he suffered from bone spurs and what have you. And then, now that he doesn't have any skin in the game, he is very excited to go out and try to start wars all over this world. And it's not going to be Ivanka or Donnie Jr. or Eric throwing on a flak jacket and headed downrange. It's going to be the working class folks and their children, the people who are listening to this program at their houses right now. So, yeah, that's what separates Donald Trump. It's not that he didn't serve and that makes him incapable of being a commander in chief. That's absolutely not true. What separates Donald Trump is that he is a draft dodger and a chicken hawk to boot.
Wow. So has it been in your experience that veterans who at first supported him have now seen through him and are coming to see the light and then maybe wanting to step up in politics? Or what's it been like to watch the reaction of vets over the course of the last year?
Yeah, I mean, I can't tell you how many people and stories I read of veterans who supported Donald Trump at the polling station last November, who now are, you know, very involved in the resistance to Donald Trump today. And yeah, they're doing that as veterans, but they're also doing that as working class people. You know, I make it a point to tell people all the time that there's a veteran class in America, and it's fundamentally part of the working class. You know, I did not serve in Iraq with any millionaires or billionaires. I didn't serve in Iraq with anybody named Trump or Coke. But I did serve with a lot of folks who came from the working class. You know, the average median income in this country right now for a veteran is about $38,000. So as Donald Trump has proven himself time and time again throughout his presidency to be an enemy of the working class, if you're an enemy of the working class, you are categorically an enemy to veterans, because veterans are fundamentally woven into the fabric of the working class.
So, well, on that, especially with Chelsea's question about supporters, where are areas that you think that Americans, in terms of veteran care, that Americans are naive about? Like, why is it so difficult for veterans and the VA to get adequate care? Because we talked a lot about that when General Shinseki was the Secretary of Veterans Affairs, and you know, we haven't had a successful VA secretary in a long time. Where are why are we so naive about and not pushing for veterans care as much as we should be?
Well, I would love to seize this opportunity to say that the reality is that the VA is a world-class healthcare provider. It is the largest integrated healthcare network in this country, and it is a system that is uniquely capable of meeting the needs of its patients, veterans. What we need, though, is a fully funded VA. We need a fully staffed VA, and we need a VA that is equipped, that's having its infrastructure invested in, to where it is in a position to be able to provide veterans, every veteran in this country, health care who earned it. Now, to give you an example, right now, at this very moment, there are 50,000 vacancies going unfilled at the VA. Now, why is that?
50,000? Well, did I hear that right?
50,000.
Wow.
Vacancies at the VA right now that are going unfilled. And these are positions that have been paid for, but they're going unfilled. Now, why are they going unfilled? Well, we have people like David Shulkin, who's Donald Trump's VA secretary. We have people like Donald Trump. People who want to destroy and privatize our VA. Now, why do they want to destroy and privatize the VA? Well, in my opinion, two simple reasons. Number one, profits. There are a tremendous amount of money to be made off providing health care for veterans. There are 9 million veterans enrolled in the VA right now, and Donald Trump seems created or committed, I should say, on creating even more veterans. By going out and starting wars all over the place. More veterans, more opportunity for profits for private health care providers if the VA were privatized and destroyed. Now, what's the number two reason? Well, in my opinion, and this is sort of a more surreptitious seasoning, the number two reason on that why people want to destroy and privatize the VA is purely ideological. You see, the VA, it's popular among the people who use it. The VA, it works really well. In the VA, it's also a government-run, single-provider healthcare system. And those who are the enemy and the opponent of Medicare for All and single-payer, they know that if they can crush the VA, they can dash the hopes of universal healthcare for all, ever being realized in this country.
Wow, that's a pretty profound statement there.
Yeah,
I think you're onto something.
Well, that's not surprising.
I mean, like, just so people at home understand, like, a single provider system, the VA most closely would resemble something like the British National Health Service. You know, it's a step more than like Medicare, right? I mean, it's the building is owned by the government. Everyone who works in there is a federal employee. I have an issue. I make an appointment. I go in. They take care of me. While I'm there, I say, hey, while I'm here, can you take a look at my knee? They took a look. I don't have to make a new appointment, so on and so forth. And it is a world-class healthcare provider.
And so your organization is helping veterans run in campaigns. Is that right?
Yes.
What are they doing for them? How are you encouraging and supporting veterans to run?
So we actually keep that pretty divided up within the organization. And as the Director of Government Relations, the overwhelming majority of my work is focused on issue advocacy. That said, VoteVets has, since our founding, worked tirelessly to get veterans elected, to progressive veterans elected to public office. I mean, I want to make clear to everybody at home, just because somebody's a veteran doesn't mean they're going to get our endorsement over a non-veteran. I mean, Doug Jones is not a veteran. Roy Moore is. I'm sure as hell not going to endorse Roy Moore. Yeah. You know, it takes more than just being a veteran to
get the support. It's a good clarification to make. I think that's important.
What we want to do is, look, we have these folks who come home, they decide that they want to continue their service as an elected official, and we work to help them find that path forward to victory, help them get their campaigns going, and we've proven to be quite successful across the country. You know, in the Senate, that's working to help get people like Tammy Duckworth, Gary Peters and Jack Reed elected, and on the House side, you know, people like Ted Lieu and Ruben Gallego and Tulsi Gabbard and Seth Moulton and Anthony Brown, so on and so forth. I keep going, but I mean, these are, and sorry for anybody that I left out, but you know, these are folks who we work to get into office that then provide a progressive veteran's voice as an elected official, and it's something that's very, very important and needed now more than ever. I don't think it's an accident that we're seeing people like Ted Lieu leading the efforts to limit Donald Trump's ability to launch a first strike nuclear attack, right? I mean, Ted Lieu is a veteran, and he understands that, and he wants to be at the forefront of that conversation. I don't think it's an accident we're seeing people like Tammy Duckworth or Ruben Gallego out here out front talking about the need to look at authorizations for military force and how those need to be talked about and debated. You know, I mean, we have an AUMF right now that's an authorization for military force. These young men who died in Niger just a couple weeks ago, I mean, the authorization of military force that was debated in Congress that put them in, that they were in Niger fighting under, it was being debated while they were wearing diapers. That's
right.
From post 9/11.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Hasn't been discussed since. And now we're in Yemen because of it.
Yeah.
So last question, Will. So you guys were getting blocked by Donald Trump with the badge of honor on Twitter. It's posted, it's pinned at the top of your Twitter page. How much longer do you think Donald Trump has as president? That's what everybody wants to know.
I want to know what did you troll him really well? Is
yes,
that how you get blocked?
I
want to know.
I happen to be the person who was sort of at the sticks that morning, and I had just dropped my partner off at the dentist, believe it or not, and was driving down the road and stopped at a red light. Don't tell the Washington D.C. police, but I was looking at Twitter while I was sitting in a red light, and it pops up about, you know, Donald Trump was, on Twitter talking about his vile and disgusting Muslim ban. And I just pulled over and I was like, you know what? You are a threat to our national security. You know, your Muslim ban is a threat to our national security, so on and so forth. And I went through just a couple of quick replies to him. And then he tweeted something about the fake news. And I replied to that, and in real time, I went to reply again, and it said, "You have been blocked."
Nice.
By this account.
Congratulations.
And we were sort of one of the first people I remember hearing about being blocked, and it happens to be because we were, and it also was the same day that he blocked Stephen King, the writer. And all of a sudden, all these reporters were asking questions, because that was also shortly after Sean Spicer had declared that all presidential tweets from the president were official statements from the White House. So, yeah, it was a bit of a thing for a second. I think I did as many interviews about that as I did on the, you know, his attempts to repeal the Affordable Care Act.
Well, listen, hopefully we can all wear that badge of blocked honor by... I think one of our guests today has been blocked by Donald Trump as well, maybe, I think.
Or
is on her way to get blocked by Donald Trump. Hey, Will, thanks for taking the time to join us today. We really appreciate all the work that you guys are doing at Vote Vets and of course, your service to our country, especially as a Marine. You know, simplify, do or die.
Oh,
that's what we do.
There you go.
Wow.
Hey.
Thanks, Will.
Where can
thank you so much. Have a lovely evening.
Just before you go, where can they find you on social media?
in case they want to block you.
Absolutely. No, I'd encourage everybody out there listening who wants to follow along. The organization's handle is at VoteVets. And then you can find my personal one at Will_C_Fisher.
Is the VoteVets account still blocked by Donald Trump?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow. Pinned. Still pinned a cool block.
I think we have a picture of the blockage. We're going to throw that up a little bit. Thanks, Will. Appreciate it.
Y'all take care.
You too. Right. You guys can find more information about the organization at votevets.org. Okay, we got a lot to talk about. So that was great. I really like him. So since the Access Hollywood tape, sexual assault, both can I talk today? Both verbally and physically has made its way like a freight train back into the mainstream.
Thank goodness. I mean, not the assault itself has made itself into the mainstream, but the talking about it. Just to clarify.
The Women's March in January awakened a sleeping giant, and with organizations like Run for Something, we've seen a significant increase in women stepping up to lead all across the country and women stepping up to call out men for unwanted sexual advances. We've heard a lot about Roy Moore over the past few weeks, but sexual assault, I reiterate, both verbal and physical, because some people don't understand that.
Harassment isn't
a partisan issue. Democrats clearly have their own set of issues that needs to be fleshed out. Here in the studio, it's girls' night. joining us is the president of San Fernando Valley Young Democrats, a board in which I sit on, Jessica Yass Barker, and our pal from Hellbent Podcast, which you can listen to on iTunes and Patheon? Maybe
anywhere you get your podcast.
Devin Handy, welcome to the show, ladies.
Hi.
Hello.
Thank you for having us. I just want to say for Giving Tuesday, every month I make a donation to Planned Parenthood in Mike Pence's name.
Nice.
Because it makes me feel better.
Have you been blocked by Mike Pence
or Donald Trump? It's one of my like loftier goals in life. No, yeah. But not yet.
It's going to be my 2018 resolution, get blocked by Donald Trump. Okay, before we dive in, I want to play a clip from this weekend with Nancy Pelosi on Meet the Press, and to get your guys' reaction.
And by due process, just because someone is accused, and was it one accusation, is it two? I think there has to be. John Conyers is an icon in our country. He has done a great deal to protect women. Violence Against Women Act, which the left wing, right wing is now quoting me as praising him for his work on that, and he did great work on that. But the fact is, as John reviews his case, which he knows, which I don't, that he will do the right thing.
And is the right thing what? Resign?
He will do the right thing in terms of what he knows about his situation.
Did she not know this question
is
coming?
He's entitled to due process, but women are entitled to due process as well.
Speaker Pelosi, ladies.
What's going on?
I'm very disappointed. I really like Nancy Pelosi, and I think she's a great leader. It's hard to see something like this because it's a very common reaction. You know, you don't want to believe that someone you know as a colleague that you've worked with is also harassing and abusing women. Like, you don't want to believe that. And you don't want to believe that someone who might have a good voting record, you know, might have a split between his professional and personal life. That said, did she just not know that was coming? Like you said, Chelsea, did she just not realize she was going to be asked about that? Because that was, the worst, most mangled response. She's the leader of the minority in the House. Like, she should have a better statement
than
that.
And the first female speaker of the House.
She's the closest woman. She's the woman that's been closest to the presidency ever. And that was her response.
Jessica? Yeah.
Not only was it a mangled response, I think it's one of the things that we've seen this week that has renewed this call for new, younger leadership. I think a lot of people see responses like that and they feel cronyism is at play. They feel that people are too stuck in their ways. I think Nancy Pelosi can be rightfully accused of that in this case. It is difficult to see your friends and your heroes in some cases. Yeah. As a young Democrat right now in the San Fernando Valley, we are seeing some of our party leaders falling because of these accusations and allegations. It's very difficult to see that happen. You have to be on the right side of history. You can't be caught defending people. I've been asked by friends, both Republicans and Democrats, what I think of Al Franken. I think he's got to go.
Yeah.
There's no justifying or rationalizing.
And is it because any harassment, that's it, or because you think it was serious enough? Because a lot of people are doing the comparative game, like, well, is it as bad as Roy Moore?
There was photographic evidence of him groping a woman. I mean,
I think that the degree of harassment or abuse or violence, that is a criminal issue. Mm-hmm. So the degree, that scale, is a criminal issue, and that's a discussion worth having. But for me, all of these men, Al Franken, Conyers, Roy Moore, I don't like to say his name, Donald Trump, they have all crossed a line of unacceptability. We need to have that line. It's not about what they did. It's that they did it, and that their, you know, whatever pleasure or whatever they were getting from that interaction was more important to them than the very real human women in front of them. And that's the line. And then the degrees, again, that to me doesn't...
Is it one accuser? Because, you know, Nancy Pelosi is saying that everybody gets their due process. Well, truth of the matter is there's not really going to be due process in court here. These are too old. It's not going to probably go to court. I mean, and there's not really exactly due process in the court of public opinion. You and I have to make up our minds about who we believe and whether we want to continue supporting either a candidate or an elected official. So how do you personally decide whether they did or didn't do it, or if it's one, two, how many?
You're right. This isn't a court of law. And for those people who are engaging in behavior that isn't against the law, harassment as an example, it's not against the law for someone to say something terrible to me at work. However, we do need to use our values to make determinations about who we want to admit or not admit to our ranks. So whether it's the Democratic Party or certain entities, like, you know, being in Congress is a job, essentially. They have constituents who are looking to them for guidance and for leadership. We do need to make decisions about who participates in these roles, whether or not they've broken the law based on values.
How would you describe the value that you would use as the standard? Because I think that's part of what the Democrats have a problem is. We say we have these values, but we're not really able to articulate them in a way that makes us a yay or nay on anything.
Well, I
solidly.
Think in this particular case, the value is less of a value and more of a basic human decency mm-hmm. problem. And this is where, you know, you said it, some people are trying to make this a partisan issue, but it's not a partisan issue. It's a patriarchy issue. And it has nothing to do with your political views, your political leanings. It has everything to do with how you view women and people who are, you know, lower on the food chain than you. So mm-hmm. it's not about a democratic value. It's about basic human decency.
So I am with you. And then I have concerns like, okay, Franken goes and Conyers goes. What's going to happen to, say, Planned Parenthood if we don't have enough Democrats in there? Are we really doing women a favor by getting rid of these guys?
Don't forget, a lot of these seats are fairly safe seats. So don't forget that if and when we are able to elect someone into these seats that is better prepared and has more integrity than their predecessor, they oftentimes will still be a Democrat that will be voting in that direction. We need people with integrity before we need a Democrat,
right.
First and foremost, mm-hmm. in some
cases. That's a tweetable.
And to Jessica's point, I mean, Minnesota has Keith Ellison. If Keith Ellison wants to step up and take over Al Franken's seat, he can do that. Michigan is fairly safe. Well, it used to be for Democrats. And I'm sure John Conyers' seat is fairly safe for Democrats as well. But just to touch on John Conyers, so for folks that don't know or who haven't been really paying attention to the Democrats because Roy Moore has been taking over the
sexual
news
assault
waves.
Airspace.
BuzzFeed reported that a female staffer accused him of sexual harassment as well as others. They settled. She signed an NDA and they moved on, and that was back in 2015. And you guys have already talked about John Conyers resigning, but I want to go back to the Pelosi statement, because what I got from that was that Nancy Pelosi seemed to be a little afraid of the base of the Democratic Party, which are African Americans.
Right.
Which are African Americans stood by Bill Cosby during his whole thing. Mm-hmm. Would African Americans see Nancy Pelosi as not protecting an African American icon, which is probably why she said it,
right.
mm-hmm. Going into a 2018 election where African Americans are needed more
right.
than most of anybody else. So that's, I could see, like, obviously it was a shitty statement, but I could see where she might have been trying to play that what base of the party do I really need to be talking to right now? Right. Hey, we get it. This is a situation. We want due process because African Americans don't get a lot of due process in the court systems as it is. I'm throwing you a lifeline.
Right.
Help me out here. If you say that I can't back this person, then yeah, great. Party won't back this person. But I'm here to tell you that we're going to protect our African American representatives as best we can. And to hell with Al Franken.
Sure.
Know what I mean? But you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But
yeah, like, it's important, however, not to get stuck in this, as some people have called it, the oppression Olympics. Like, who's more oppressed? Is it women or is it African Americans? And who do we need to care more about in this scenario? It's a really difficult problem. It's a wicked problem that you have to look at. But if we're talking about sexual assault and this discussion that she's having, she needs to answer to that question.
Right.
Yeah. What would a better answer have been? Drexel, if you were trying to play, but I mean, because I think you have a good point as to why she was a little defensive of him. So how could she be defensive of him, but also still be the leader that women want to see, as in she's defending women? I mean, maybe it's easy for us to be critical of her because I'm sitting here trying to think of what would I have said if I were Nancy.
Right.
Yes, but I'm not. You're not the minority leader of the House of Representatives.
Right. I mean, I don't know what she could have said. I'm just saying from a political standpoint, I could see how difficult that probably could have been because the Congressional Black Caucus is already starting to push him out. And I think she might have been waiting. I mean, obviously she got that question before any of the black leaders did. Mm-hmm. And maybe she was waiting on them to say, hey, it's okay to
That he, because he let go of his
judiciary chairmanship.
Right. So is that sort of his, like, that's what he's going to give up because of this, but then he's going to stay put? Or do you think he was sort of forced out?
Well, don't forget that this is a pattern that we've seen before. Harassment occurred or an assault occurred. A settlement was made. An NDA was signed. Do you really believe this was the only woman that he did this
right,
to?
Right, right.
And you have to be careful not to – you have to see if other shoes fall, right? Because it's possible that it might get more egregious.
Well, it wasn't like that settlement didn't happen under Pelosi's watch as leader. So there is a little bit of – her statement was a little confusing because I was like, but you were there. It came out of – probably the Democrat side of the budget. You know, I mean, it was a lot of money. Would have seen that money go somewhere.
Do we know how much money it was?
No. The process is also extremely opaque and confusing. And actually, there was another woman that accused Conyers, and she tried to file a civil suit back in February of this year. She actually dropped the suit the next month in March because the court denied her motion to seal it, which I understand, like, especially in a sort of old boys club like politics, something like that is a career ender. Mm-hmm. And so instead, she wanted to do this civil suit, but they wouldn't seal it. And so she said it's not worth it. And then on top of that, before you even get to a civil suit, this the process that someone has for reporting sexual abuse, sexual harassment, sexual assault in the chambers of Congress is abhorrent.
So they've been trying to change the rules in the House. Jackie Speier has been spearheading.
Nicely played.
Thank you. I didn't write that down, guys. Patty Murray, Richard Burr, Republican in the Senate. So they've been kind of working together to get these rules changed. Devin, can you kind of explain what the current rules are and if you guys think that the rules that they're trying to implement will go far enough in making those significant changes?
Yeah, sure. Jackie Speier last week said that, since 1997, something like 260 claims have paid out $15 million.
Wow.
That is an incredible amount.
That's just on the Democrats?
No.
Or is that total?
That's total.
Okay.
In the House. So they've proposed this new Me Too legislation. So currently the system for reporting sexual harassment or sexual abuse is within 180 days or 6 months of the harassment, you have to go in person to the Office of Compliance and make a written statement. Then you have to do 30 days of counseling. Then you have 15 days to decide if you want to go on to 30 days of mediation. So then you do 30 days of mediation if you decide. And then you can work out a settlement there. And if you get a settlement there, you sign a non-disclosure agreement, and the taxpayers pay out that settlement.
That is, and so all the while,
well, hold on. And if you don't find a settlement in mediation, you then have a 30-day cool down period before you can file a civil suit. And then if you do win that civil suit, you have to sign an NDA, and the taxpayers pay that suit as well.
So, and all the while, this is what the victim is going
yes.
through.
Yes. Oh,
what
and
is the
at
assailant
every stage,
doing?
Well,
I would love
stage,
to know.
He's sitting in his office
yes.
in his underwear.
Yes.
Thank you.
Well, because at every stage, the taxpayers pay for legal counsel for the accuser, not the victim. And they make no effort to change the work environment. So while this is a 90-plus day process, you're still going to work and working with this person every single day.
Yikes.
So, the Me Too legislation. The idea is to revamp this whole system. So they want to create an online system to submit claims. They want to get rid of the 90-day mess of mediation and counseling and cool-down periods. They want to make it so that the victim also has taxpayer legal counsel. Hmm. They want to extend this sort of system to all interns, fellows, and pages, in addition to staffers, which again is another kind of scale of power hierarchy that we don't really think of, because you know there are staffers, there's senior staffers, but then there's people who get coffee and they are also subject to these things, and they can't even go to the Office of Compliance and make a claim.
As of right now, the rules don't include them.
Exactly. Hmm. So that's what this Me Too legislation is aiming to do. It also creates a periodic climate survey to make sure everything's going well. I don't know exactly what that means. It sounds a little bit like horse poo-poo, but who knows? So they're really trying to overhaul this system.
But
do you sound? I don't. Sense, no, I mean, I don't hear a whole lot of enthusiasm.
I think that when you talk about things like Franken and Conyers and getting these men out, that's treating the symptom. That's treating something that's happening, and it's not really addressing the root cause. I think this legislation is making a real attempt at addressing the root cause of these problems. You know, this system is obviously extremely convoluted for a reason, and that reason is to make it difficult for women to come forward. But that's only one part of addressing the root problems.
It's also addressing the most immediate problem,
exactly.
Right? So they're trying to ebb the flow
right.
of constant barrage of
exactly.
complaints right now, but addressing the root is also really important.
So, Jessica, do you think that with the new legislation, I mean, that Republicans are going to be on board with this?
I think they have to be.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's no way. There,
you know what? It's interesting because I think women are feeling really – men and women who are reporting sexual harassment and assault right now are feeling really supported. We're feeling really buoyed by this wave of realization and revelation around these issues. And it's a bit of a faux pas to question the validity of these claims and question the needs of these women for the first time ever. I'm not saying that's going to last forever,
right.
But right now it's feeling like a universal issue.
Right. So, well, and I think one thing too that the Me Too legislation is trying to address, and I think this is really important, is it's getting rid of the mandatory non-disclosure agreements.
Mm-hmm.
Because when
right.
you sign those non-disclosure agreements, it includes a stipulation that you can't go to any other ethics committee. So basically,
yeah.
your claim ends there. You can never talk about it ever
right.
again.
Once you get your payout,
right?
Everything Donald Trump has done
right.
since he's probably
right.
a teenager,
right? So I think that's really important: is getting rid of that NDA and making it easier for these women to get recourse, and then also speak about it, because, like
sure.
you said, that's how you get this support going,
right.
is talking about it and making it very public.
I know we're talking about the Democrats today, but I'm. Why? Because I want to go back to the Republican thing real quick, because I haven't heard a thing from Joni Ernst, a thing from Susan Collins, a thing from Lisa Murkowski, any of the Republican women on that side.
I think they're shocked that women are still supporting Roy Moore and they don't know what to do with themselves.
But I mean, this isn't the first. Like, Susan Collins has been pretty, I mean, fairly moderate ish over the past few months. Joni Ernst just doesn't say anything. I mean, she's straight from Iowa. She probably – I don't know what she believes at this point, because she doesn't say anything. Like, nobody hears from Joni Ernst, probably because she wants to be vice president and she doesn't want to mess up at some point. So that's why I'm a little concerned. That's why I'm a little iffy about like how Republican men will take it if the Republican women aren't saying anything.
Yeah,
I will say that the letter that was signed off on by hundreds of women in California politics, not at the federal level, but the We Said Enough campaign, which is similar to Me Too in a way, was signed by legislators, chiefs of staff, staffers, lobbyists, both sides of the aisle. So you're seeing it in California for sure. But I don't know.
Never know what the Republicans are doing. How should you guys, how should Democrats, particularly, we've just saw Nancy Pelosi, how should they be playing this whole thing? Like, we didn't really hear the Democrats talk about Roy Moore at all. Democrats just let Republicans fall on the sword, and then it turned out that the sword was double-edged and there was a problem. And so should there be a blanket no-tolerance policy? And I say that because we talked about it briefly in San Fernando Valley Young Democrats, whether or not we should, and Stonewall and some of the other boards I sit on whether or not this should be expanded. It should be a blanket thing. We start to call out individual people and not necessarily all Democrats. Should it be a no tolerance across the board? Should that come from the DNC all the way down and be a no tolerance policy on candidates? But I mean, what do you do in that case? Do you find new candidates? Like, what is that like?
Well, yeah, I mean, I feel like one thing that I've been thinking a lot about since the Roy Moore stuff came out, and I to your point, I think that's why Susan Collins and Joni Ernst and Murkowski aren't really saying anything, is because they're kind of like, we're going to let the Democrats just handle that one and see what happens, and we'll jump in if we have to. But what I was thinking a lot about with Roy Moore is, couldn't we make this a legal problem? Can we say there are standards that you have to meet to be a candidate for, you
tax
know,
returns and no sexual assault complaints?
I mean, I feel
you.
Like we're talking about the bare minimum here, like lowest bar possible. But like making those legal requirements instead of just democratic norms, because as we've seen in this administration, democratic norms are like just... Yeah, it's like they're not there, right? They're just whoop, right by them. So, you know, what I've been thinking a lot about is, do we make them legal? Do we say, okay, to be a candidate for the Senate, which is one of the, you know, most prestigious jobs you can have in this country, do you have to meet certain ethical requirements? And I think it's not a bad idea, but I think something like saying the DNC is like, we will not support you, we will not give you money, we will not run your campaign if you have a history of sexual assault.
But then, okay, so then Republicans are like, ooh, fantastic. I'm just going to hire a bunch of women to accuse these men
of things.
Which
is what Project Veritas did yesterday.
Right, and Washington Post did their due diligence, so they found, mm-hmm. and, you know, there was that whole story
of... the DNC would do as good a job as fact-checking as the Washington Post did.
Although, are you the story in Alabama where Bernie Bernstein from the Washington mm-hmm. Post was calling people, asking for stories, like... You know, there's always going to be people trying to do that. And I do think the weaponization of sort of accusations and accusers is definitely a tool we have to be aware of. We have to be acutely aware of.
That's the part that scares me, because I think at some point it's going to maybe go too far and one person is going to be found out to be a phony, and then everybody's credibility is going to be reduced.
I feel like this is what that was Project Veritas's objective.
Mm. Yeah.
Which was to not just discredit the media, mm-hmm. but discredit the women right. coming forward, which is why somehow Donald Trump is still president of the United States.
I don't mean to be too anecdotal, but as far as the three women in this room, I don't know how many of you or your friends would ever come forward with a fake sexual assault allegation.
Right.
And this goes back to the entire believe them, believe women, which is that very, very small percentages of false allegations are almost ever made. And
yeah, but
so
Jamie Phillips was ready to make up an entire thing because she was on the payroll.
Right.
It's one person, though.
Right.
It reminds me of this woman back in February who tried to file a civil suit against John Conyers, and instead of going through with it to potentially get her story out there and, you know,
withdrew
get a settlement,
it.
She was like, you know what, forget it. It's not worth it. That's how hard it is to come forward with sexual assault allegations. And, you know, I think that if Republicans are going to try to, you know, derail this legislation, it's going to be on the, oh, well, false accusations are common thread. And it's just not true.
And the UVA story in Rolling Stone,
Rolling Stone
help our cause at all.
Or the Duke story.
I mean, it does happen. I mean, it's the same thing.
But it gets an outsized piece of media attention when it happens, which is yet another way to beat back or suppress female voice.
Right.
one of the things that has been happening over the past couple of weeks since the Conyers, since the Frankensteins, is that people are bringing Bill Clinton back up.
Oh yeah.
Is there
not just people, victims?
Victims. Yeah, victims. Well, but is there a false equivalence between Roy Moore and Bill Clinton?
I think Roy Moore is a pedophile. And was not the president of the United States.
But they didn't. They haven't really framed. We as in the left side, right. has kind of framed it as pedophilia. But the media really hasn't. They've more framed it as sexual harassment and less about the other side.
Of 14-year-olds,
right? Well, I mean, you're hearing more. You're hearing the word sexual harassment more than you're hearing.
Maybe it's pedophile. The news I'm reading. I've heard pedophilia with him a few times. And I would also like to point out that Claire McCaskill has come forward and said and drawn a very clear line. She spoke on a podcast, I believe, recently saying there is a different – yeah, I think that's what it was. There's a difference between sexual harassment and pedophilia,
right.
And that you do need to draw, I think, what she called a very bright line down the middle of those two things. Both are unethical. One is extremely illegal. So I don't think you do draw – a parallel between them, although keep in mind that when Bill Clinton was engaging with Monica Lewinsky, the power differential there is so intense that there is almost this, the imbalance is so large. I wouldn't compare it to pedophilia, but it is so unethical. It's very muddy water, but there, the power imbalance is there.
Speaking of that, Jessica, so you were recently featured in an article titled In Her Own Words, Women of California Politics Tell Their Stories of Sexual Harassment and Unwanted Touching. That was the LA Times, I believe. In it, you talk about your time as a 17-year-old campaign staffer who had unwanted advances from a campaign manager.
Sure.
Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure.
I have it right here.
There it is. I told two stories in the LA Times, and it was interesting because I started by telling the story about when I was 26, and then all of a sudden, in the moment, I was like, wait a second, something happened to me when I was 17, too, and at the time, it didn't feel like harassment because I was 17 years old, and there was this much older, good-looking, political kind of a political operative running a campaign. I looked up to him. And any attention he would lavish on me was very welcome. Not just attention that I thought was flirtatious, but you know, professional attention. And I thought that this person would be a mentor for a very long time. And to be fair, I carried on a professional relationship with him for years after. But I was told that we were going to go out for my 18th birthday, which in and of itself is a little sick if you think about it. Someone counting down? Is he watching the clock? And I thought we were going out with a group of people from the office, but when I showed up, it was just him and we were at his house. Not only was it just him, but he had an ID card from a woman who was over 21 and brunette. So that's apparently all it takes, because that's what I look like, more or less, a white woman who was brunette. We go out to a bar. I don't drink. I'm at this point starting to get pretty nervous. I was not a partier when I was 17. And, by the time we get back to my house, before I go to get into my car and leave, he grabs me. And I was an intern. I was one of lots of interns on that campaign. I shudder to think how many women he has done this to. But at the time I remember thinking, well, at least I got out of there. And also kind of thinking I was, I don't know if I can swear on this podcast.
Yes, you can.
Thinking I was hot shit. Ooh, look at me. Look at the attention I'm getting.
Right.
And, you know, hopefully thinking this would be a professional relationship too, some cognitive dissonance, and tried to carry on a mentorship mentee relationship with this person for many years until I finally realized that it was not what he was interested in. So I didn't feel victimized at the time, but in retrospect, it was extremely inappropriate and I didn't have the tools to understand that. So,
Speaking of inappropriate, San Fernando Valley Young Democrats recently called for the resignation of two powerful California Democrats, Raul Bocanegra, who resigned yesterday. What did you think of Bocanegra's resignation statement?
Oh, what an embarrassment, right? Tactless, self-serving, going down in flames. I can't think of a worse way for him to exit the office. He continued to deny that his victims were telling the truth. He called it a political hit job, I think, as if that's what we're worried about, was ruining his political reputation. No, you're a sexual predator. So, pretty pathetic. I'll let Devin say something.
Well, I think it's pattern. You know, mm-hmm. You see that a lot. You know, even Al Franken, who's supposed to be like the, you know, have the I'm on board with the ethics committee investigating me. Mm-hmm. And even his statements are pathetic. They're like, I'm a warm person, and I'm sorry if you misinterpreted my warm hug. Like,
so
oh, come on.
Right,
yeah, like,
I like warm hugs.
I thought he put his tongue down someone's throat.
Yeah,
though.
No, exactly. So it's just sort of like...
Extra warm.
So it's just, warm. It's like there's this idea that, you know, if you're accused, then... You know, you kind of put out these non-apologies and then everything goes away. And there's been a lot of talk about, you know, how much do we need from these men and how many times do they have to die? And I think it was Rebecca Traister who, because someone had said that about Al Franken, like, how many times does he have to die? And she goes, he's not dead.
Right.
And but that's the thing, is that these reputations of these men and their jobs are so important, mm-hmm. that
they'll double down.
They'll double down. They'll triple down, and people will defend them for it because it's so important. It's so much more important that they have their reputation and their job than the safety of the women that work for them.
And one of the things I've been asked recently is, do you really want to come forward about this? He has kids. You know, he has a career. Do you really want to ruin this for him? And I'm like, excuse me.
Yeah.
He ruined this for himself when he decided to assault someone. You cannot put the consequences of someone's actions on the victim.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I shed zero tears for career.
I don't even shed tears. So it's okay. When do you guys think that California Senator Tony Mendoza is going to step down?
Well, he's been stripped of his committeeships, right?
Yeah.
I've also heard that he will be compelled to step down by the speaker. We don't know if that will happen or not. But I'm glad to see other people stepping down of their own volition after, of course, lots of pressure from their colleagues. I don't know. I can't speak for the senator.
Again, I mean, it's hard to tell because he might, you know, feel enough pressure. He might feel enough to get out. But then
waiting to see if more things come out.
Exactly, exactly. Or, you know, he might just double, triple down and, mm-hmm. you know, just go with that story. I mean, it's so hard to tell. It's so hard to tell.
Yeah, it's all a little...
That's why it's
important. I'm
actually
in Boca Negra's district, or his assembly district, so...
You should run, I mean, Drexel.
You're not the first one to suggest that.
Hey, Drexel, maybe you
anyway,
the
so there's another... there's another in 39th. There's another article coming out later this week, Jessica, in the LA Times. can you talk a little bit about what we can expect from that article?
I'm not exactly sure if or when it will be published. I can't speak too much about it, but what I will tell you is that... there are more people serving in the California legislature that have engaged in very inappropriate behavior, crossing into illegal behavior, and women are finally finding their voices and they are speaking out.
Anybody that is anybody that we should...
I guess you'll have to wait.
Oh, man, we got to wait. So we'll be tweeting out the other
time. I want to know, is that campaign manager that... the responsible for when you were 17, is he still around?
He's still around. He's no longer in office. Mm. Yeah.
Oh.
So we'll see.
Yeah.
I don't know.
The plot.
Yeah. It's just so hard. You know, to hear that, it's like I think if you dive into it, and I think if more women keep coming forward, I think even though I'm already like a cynical, like, jaded person, I feel like it'll even shock me the number of mostly men in office that have abused, assaulted, and harassed women. Mm-hmm. I think
it's been extremely socially acceptable to do. I think even men who are probably a lot of people in their lives would say that they're good men have done things that they regret.
Yeah.
And I know that people feel like there's a firing squad and everyone has to be really careful and people are walking on eggshells. I think the pendulum has swung very far in one direction and we will see things start to normalize. But yes, there's a possibility that most men you know in office have done something untoward at one point or another. Yeah. Perhaps that's true. We just need to continue to give women the opportunity to talk about their experiences and allow that to be part of what draws people out.
Well, shoot, that's a good place to leave it right there. I like that. Thank you, ladies, for
coming
in today.
Like that in the worst way possible.
In the worst way possible. Where can they find you both on social media?
You can find me at Devin Handy, and you can follow Hellbent at Hellbent Pod.
Jessica?
At Jessica Yaz. And San Fernando Valley Young Democrats is sfvyd.org.
Come join us. As always, we love viewer feedback and listener feedback, so continue to leave your comments and thoughts on the show in our chat. And hello, everybody in the chat. I saw you guys talking, so hello. Don't forget, next week is our year in review show. And this is actually our last
show. The actual last one. Not like last week, how it was like next week is the last one. No, this one is going to be the actual last
one. Yeah, before we go
on
break.
This one is the last one of like just our show. Next week is just going to be a two-hour shit show of all things politics on AfterBuzz.
Who knows what's going to happen next week? Because we got the whole family back except for Stephen Helmkamp. be sure to subscribe to Political Beat on iTunes podcast. You can follow Chelsea.
At Chelsea Galicia.
And me at Drexel Hurd. We will see you all with the Trump Report next week.
Bye.
I love it. I love it. I'm sitting there tweeting. Bing, bing, bing. You press a button. Bing, bing.
They all hand you checks. Bing, 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 bing.
We had our beautiful Marine standing there. Bing, 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 bing.
You know, in the old days, bing, bong.
You know, with the map? Bing, bing, bing.
Little mouth on him. Bing, bing, bing. Bing, 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 bing.
Bing, bing, bing. They're cleaning up.
Fix it up. Bing, bing, bing.
A 14-point plan. Bing, bing, bing.
Anthony Weiner. You know, the little bing, bing, bing.
Everyone's attacked me has gone bing.
Everyone else, bing. Where have they gone? Bing.
Wow, what a tackle. Bing.
Playing cards. Bing, bing, bing.
Those tunnels. Bing, boom. Right under the toilet. Bing, boom. Right up.
Bing. Like a rocket ship, except in the wrong direction.
I'd fly over, drop them right on top. You know, just bing.
They want me to use the pump because the other one, which I really like better than the bing.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.